Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Thursday, April 30th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast is Gold, Oil, and War. We're going to be doing a little bit of a mismatch here, mismash, whatever you want to call it, of some topics here that we've been discussing for quite a while. I think they're starting to come to a head, perhaps. Something smells awfully fishy to me, and I don't like what it is. Now, of course, I'm not 100% certain that this is going to be the case. I hope very much so that I am 100% in the wrong here. But I am basing this off of some recent stories that I've come across that I want to share with the audience, some recent analysis, obviously, we've been having here recently and in the past. And I just think it's going to come to a head in some sort of conflict, if not all-out war, or at least some sort of proxy war. And I'm going to do my best to sort of connect the dots like we do here at the Capital News on a regular basis. We're going to talk about the market performance, initial jobless claims, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, a brief update to Boeing, and then we're going to get down to the China blame game and the news that I am most concerned about surrounding Venezuela, their gold reserves, and some of the things that are taking place there. So you'll understand how it's all sort of starting to tie together and why we have that title, Gold, Oil, and War. So first to market performance. Stocks across the board were down today. Time of this podcast, the futures market. Dow Jones and S&P 500 are both down 1.3%. The NASDAQ 100 is down 1.6%. Japanese cash trade is currently down 2.4%. Across the pond in Europe, indexes were down anywhere from 2 to 3.5%. And live trading down under in Australia is also down 3.3%. So is this just a big rally across the board giving off steam, or is this what we talked about yesterday where many markets have had such a retracement from a technical standpoint that they've hit their limit, they're hitting resistance, and they're bouncing back down? Or is this just a little bit of a breather for the next leg up to break through that resistance and then to become support and then to make a next leg higher? We are, you know, just a day away from May, and are we going to go back to that old selling phrase, right? Sell in May and go away. That's been taking place past couple of years. It takes place quite frequently, actually, in the month of May. Will that continue? Time will tell, but it comes at such an interesting time with all of these technical retracements, and then again, that old adage, sell in May and go away. So we'll see what happens. However, on the commodity front, with respect to oil, it continues its rally higher. WTI is trading at $19.63 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, is at $27 per barrel. Natural gas is also catching a bid, trading at $1.94 per million British thermal units. Gold and silver taking a little bit of a hit. Gold is back below $1,700 an ounce, trading at $1,687 an ounce. Silver, $14.97 per ounce. Uncle Sam's U.S. 10-year Treasury yielding 0.62%. So that's some of the market performance across the board. Let's see here. Japanese manufacturing PMI revised lower. Revised lower to a reading of 41.9 for the month of April. Again, anything above 50 is expansion. Anything below 50 is contraction. Japanese manufacturing PMI revised lower to a reading of 41.9. South Korean exports fall the most since May of 2009, tumbling 24.3% on a year-over-year basis. Australian PMI manufacturing at an 11-year low. PMI of 35.8 for the month of April, down from 53.7 in the month of March. So a huge decline in manufacturing PMI in the land down under, hitting an 11-year low at 35.8. What's 11 years ago? The great financial crisis. Federal Reserve expands their Main Street lending program. Yippee-ki-yay, some relief to the small, mid-sized businesses. Oh, wait, they're expanding it to $5 billion in revenue and 15,000 employees. Ladies and gentlemen, there ain't no small business that has $5 billion in revenue and 15,000 employees. There's no mid-sized business, or not many of them, that's going to have $5 billion in revenue and 15,000 employees. These are the big boys. Again, there's no more curtain There's nobody behind the curtain. It's in your face what they are doing with this funny money. As to who they are truly bailing out, who they are truly giving the money to at warp speed. We know who's getting it at warp speed, and we know who's getting it at a snail's pace, don't we? Where's the outrage? I believe it will be coming, because what we are going to witness over the coming months is going to be truly tragic. Truly tragic. But that just feeds into the whole thing of a severe recession that's going to turn into a depression, perhaps the greatest depression. We've done this to ourselves. We've elected these politicians. We've allowed these central bankers to run roughshod. We've allowed corporate America to get away with what they are getting away with and have been. We've allowed ourselves to continue to live well beyond our means. There's a whole bunch of blame to go around, but there is nobody taking responsibility. There's no accountability of any of this. There's no oversight of any of this. I mean, just wait. Maybe we'll get some hard-pressing questions when Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, goes before Congress. Maybe a couple politicians will grill him with some hard questions. Doubtful, but maybe a couple. Let's hope. But he'll probably hide behind some sort of bank secrecy laws. We've discussed these here before. Ben Bernanke hid behind bank secrecy laws during the great financial crisis and thereafter. And to his credit, Senator Bernie Sanders is one of those politicians who asked then-Chairman Ben Bernanke some serious hard questions about where all that money went. And Chairman Bernanke said, no, I'm not going to tell you. Bank secrecy laws protect me. Look it up. I'm sure you can still find the clip somewhere on C-SPAN or YouTube. Look it up if you don't believe me. President of the United States, Mr. President, there is an inspector general who has been tasked with overlooking all of these funds, these billions and billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, that now rests with the responsibility at the Treasury Department. Yeah, we're not going to allow him to look at anything. In fact, we're going to fire him, and he did. So the inspector general is gone, who's supposed to be overlooking this, and the president wasn't going to play ball with him anyway. Is this draining the swamp? Is this making America great again? Is this keeping America great? Is this what you voted for? Because it's right in your face. It's right in your face. Are you going to go pull that lever again for Donald J. Trump? I'm not advocating that you do or don't. I'm not advocating necessarily that you vote for Biden. In fact, I guess what I am advocating for, so I got to take that back, not to vote for either of these clowns. Although I doubt that's going to take place. I'm sure many of you are going to fall back into your respective silos. You're going to think that this wrestling match is real. It's as fake as the WWE. But hey, it's a free country. You can do what you want. But like I'm saying, I'm calling for a peaceful revolution here. Please leave the Republican Party. Please leave the Democratic Party, because they have left you. They have abandoned you a long, long time ago. They are trampling on the Constitution. Day after day, they are shredding it right before you. Do you care? Are you paying attention? Maybe you think I'm crazy, but I'm going to keep saying it because I think that's the truth. Trillions of dollars unaccounted for, they don't have, we don't have, states don't have it. Not a problem, I guess. Not a problem. As long as they can feed you some Republican talking point or some Democratic talking point, you're happy to continue with your respective club. I think it's time to leave the club. I think it's time to burn it down, because they have burned this country down, and it's burning right now, and they are bailing themselves out. Bailing themselves out to the tunes of trillions of dollars while they hand out $1,200 to everybody else, the sit-down, shut-up money, and that's exactly what it is. But I think things will be coming to a head here to a theater near you. Federal Reserve expands their balance sheet, not as much as we would have thought. Quite surprising, it now stands at $6.65 trillion. $6.65 trillion is the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Only up $82 billion. That's it. Only $82 billion. I mean, isn't it amazing that we're saying only $82 billion? Because the prior weeks have been $200, $250 billion, $500 billion. I guess they're taking a break. I guess after expanding their balance sheet by some $2 trillion over the past several weeks, it's time to take a break. And maybe that's why the stock market sold off today, too. Because the Federal Reserve took a break. What's that tell you, folks? Rigged? Fixed game? All about liquidity, not about the fundamentals. I think it will be about the fundamentals. I think the technicals will have something to say about this too. I think ultimately the fundamentals will win out. They can only gloss over so much of this. They can only fill back a hole that is getting bigger as we speak to a certain degree. They're not going to be able to run and cover from all of this. That could have been your last chance, perhaps. Time will tell if this rally is a bull trap and just a bear market rally, so to speak, here, which are known to be very, very strong, which is what we have witnessed over the past several weeks. Is it reaching its limits? Is it sell in May and go away? Well, we're about to find out. That's the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Initial jobless claims out. Another 3.8 million Americans filed for unemployment insurance, taking the total over the past 6 weeks to about 30 million Americans. So over the past 6 weeks, some 30 million Americans have filed for unemployment insurance. This number will likely continue to get higher until there is a quote-unquote full reopening of the economy. However, I think these numbers are going to be quite persistent. We did a Capital Economics presentation on this the other week. Check that out on thecapitalnews.com when we're talking about initial jobless claims, just so you can get an actual visual of what's going on. The same analysis stands, nothing extra, nothing fancy, just so you can actually get a visual of how these figures have been off the charts over the past several weeks. Even at 3.8 million, it is off the charts and is still a multiple higher of where we were during the depths of the great financial crisis, just to give you a little bit of perspective as to what's taking place in this economy. Okay? Now, we can hope for a V-shaped recovery, but when we think about it logically, it's just not going to happen, at least not across the entirety of the U.S. economy. It's just not. We've talked about the changes to local laws. We're already starting to see that take place, at least on a temporary basis, which is exactly what we were predicting was likely going to take place. I mean, this isn't rocket science here. I'm not patting myself on the back. But these are the factors that you have to take into consideration if you're going to say, well, it's going to be a V-shaped recovery, U, L-shaped, whatever letter you want to use, okay? These are the simple, basic questions you have to ask yourself to come to that type of conclusion. And I just don't think there's going to be enough people coming back into the workforce, that there's not going to be enough consumers jumping back into everything that is going to warrant or call for any type of V-shaped recovery when it comes to the economy. What you witness in the stock market, heads or tails, your guess is as good as mine. That's all it is. It's a guess. Because these guys are doing things they've never done before to a degree that they've never done before. All right? So be on the lookout for all of that. When it comes to Boeing, you know, miraculously, they found somebody to buy a whole bunch of their bonds. Gee, I wonder who that could be. Are they investment grade? Well, I guess the Federal Reserve can buy them then if Boeing has investment grade bonds. Are they junk? Oh, well, that doesn't matter either because the Federal Reserve can buy junk bonds now too. Or is it BlackRock? Is it BlackRock buying them up? Some combination thereof? Is it the U.S. Treasury via BlackRock? BlackRock via the Treasury? Aren't they all together now? Aren't they all joined at the hip? Is this not now a fascist state by definition? Corporations and government merging together? That's the definition of it. That's how Mussolini thought it should be better defined, fascism. The merger between corporate and state. Now, of course, big corporations. But that's what we're here for. To work for fascism, to work for the corporate state. That's where we are. So that's some of the market performance, the initial jobless claims, you know, yada, yada, yada. We'll keep you updated as these numbers continue to come out. We'll do some more Capital Economics presentations to give you more visuals as these numbers continue to be published. Now, gold, oil, and war, title of today's podcast. As we were discussing several weeks ago, we said be on the lookout for the blame game to start picking up, right? The blame game when it comes to COVID-19 and all of the economic, social, any type of fallout, health fallout, anything. Look for the blame game to start picking up speed, picking up pace. Well, we're starting to see it. The White House, the State Department, the President himself, Secretary of State himself are starting to come out and really start to drive home that China is going to have to take some sort of responsibility here. Now, of course, there's a little bit of dancing, depending on who's talking. That's politics of the matter. But, you know, they did something. They didn't tell us the truth. They're not counting all these numbers correctly. They're going to have to pay. They're either going to have to cut us a check. We're going to, I guess, default on bonds that we would owe them. Something's going to have to take place here, right? Now, the question Is this just politics? Remember, this is 2020. This is a presidential election year. So is this politics or is this policy? Because the president, love him or hate him, does have some good instincts when it comes to politics. He knows that a lot of people in this country blame China for COVID-19 entirely. A lot of people think that this is a bioweapon. It's possible that it is. And the president is going to exploit this to his political benefit, regardless of whether this is a political argument or one of policy. China is going to pay for it. Highly reminiscent of Mexico is going to pay for the wall, right? This is Trump playing to his base. This is Trump playing to a population in this country that is very emotional, that has been quarantined, locked down for months, that are restless, that are ready to get back to work, that are ready to get back to quote-unquote normal. People are frustrated, people are upset, people are tired of being tired. This is all about politics, in my opinion. Because you're going to open up a Pandora's box if this becomes actual policy and allowing states or individuals to actually, to actually sue or seek some sort of relief from China. Because no government, big or small, socialist, communist, fascist, claims to be free, is clean. So you are going to open up a Pandora's box, and I don't think any other government is going to want to open themselves up to any type of retaliation. So I tend to believe that most of this, at least right now, is all about politics. It's about playing to what people, so many people, want to hear, right? A few years ago, in the 2016 presidential election, what did so many people want to hear? It's not our fault. It's never our fault. It's always somebody else's fault. It's those damn Mexicans taking our jobs. It's those damn Chinese taking our jobs. The Indians, the Brazilians. Everybody but us. Couldn't be our policies. It couldn't be our reckless behavior. It's always somebody else. And that's exactly what China's going to do. They're going to blame somebody else. That's what the Canadians are going to do. That's what the British are going to do. The Europeans, the Mexicans, everybody, all of these governments are going to start blaming somebody else. Now, when it comes to COVID-19, a lot of those fingers will be pointed at China. Now, you want to play the tough guy? Be my guest. You want to say globalization is dead? We got to bring everything back and nationalize, blah, 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 everything. Good luck. Good luck. You can play the tough guy. You can do this. This is not the first time. This has not been the birth of globalization, ladies and gentlemen. Globalization has been here for a very, very long time. Okay? It was around during World War II. It was around during the Great Depression. In fact, some further protectionist policies that put on tariffs during the Great Depression elongated the severity and the duration of the Great Depression. Trade wars, currency wars, same song and dance. Recession, depression, and if I'm right, next, it's going to be some sort of major conflict, if not outright war. All right, now, do you think the United States and China are going to go at it one-on-one? No. Not likely, at least not at first, and that sets up your proxy wars. Well, who sets up for some of your proxy wars? Venezuela and Iran. And before we get to that in some of those articles, I just want this audience to understand, especially those of you who might be joining for the first time or are relatively new, I am not an apologist for China. I don't think we should be doing business with them given their human rights violations. But that does not mean that our hands are clean either. Because I can run off a list of the things that we have done to so many countries and so many people around the world, it'll make you sick. So we're not clean in this either. So I'm not an apologist for the Chinese, but I'm not an apologist for the United States of America either, in condemning, or condoning what they have done, what we have done, what has been done in our name, with our hard-earned tax dollars. Things that we would never allow or tolerate for one second to be done to us, we do to so many the world over, and have for decades. For decades. And personally, I think the rest of the world is getting sick and tired of it, and I think they're starting to get savvier, or more savvy, I don't know, when it comes to some of the economic warfare, some of the currency wars that are taking place, some of those things that might be taking place behind the scenes in setting up payment systems that removes countries from utilizing the U.S. dollar. And of course, a lot of this is our fault here in the United States because of the massive amounts of debt that we are taking on and the deficits that we are adding on to the trillions now. Not hundreds of billions, now it's in the trillions. It's going to be a $4 trillion deficit this year, if we're lucky. It'll probably be more than that. $4 trillion. You know, all of the great empires don't collapse because they were attacked from the outside. It's always the internal destruction that takes place that weakens them. And it allows any type of external enemy to feel emboldened to attack it and sort of be that final death nail, if you will. It's always from the internals. It's always on the inside. We are destroying ourselves. And with these policies that we have been adopting over the past month and a half, in addition to what we've done over the past decade with this fraudulent, flawed economic policy of quantitative easing, zero interest rates, negative interest rates, you name it, we are destroying ourselves. And what is going to unfold on the other side of this is going to be truly devastating. The inflation, the stagflation, the hyperinflation. This is a process. It takes time. It's not a flip of a switch. It's not a drop of a hat. Just like a bull market turning into a bear market does not happen overnight. It is a process. Going into war or any type of conflict doesn't just simply happen overnight. It is a process. I don't like any of this stuff, but I'm not here to talk about butterflies and unicorns. I'm here to look at the news. I'm here to conduct my analysis, look at the data that's provided to us, dig deep into it, and conduct my analysis and share that with this audience. You can agree, you can disagree. That's what this podcast is all about. You agree? Tell me you agree and why. You disagree? Tell me you disagree and why. I'm not going to be upset. That's what this is about. Hopefully I'm strengthening your thinking, and in course you can change and strengthen mine. That's what it's about. But this blame game, it's going to get carried away. It's going to be us blaming somebody, it's going to be somebody else blaming us or some other country, and round we go until we find ourselves in another conflict because it's a distraction, and when all else fails, they take us to war. This is based in historical context. I am not just saying this. I don't want this to happen. I hope I am wrong. I hoped I was wrong about the massive sell-off, the blow-off top, but that took place, didn't it? I said, I don't know when it's going to happen, but are you going to like this melt-up? You might like it because your 401k is going up, but are you going to be ready? Are you going to be able to time the blow-off top? You're going to be able to time that huge drop-off? 35, 40%? How did you handle that one? That's what I'm saying, folks. If I had a crystal ball, I'd share it with you, but I don't. So pay attention to what's going on. So here, I want to move to a couple articles. One of them I came across yesterday and started sort of scratching my head, is this something more? And then this evening, a buddy of mine actually sent me another article, that one from Bloomberg, which I'm going to read here now, basically with the same topic of Venezuela and their gold reserves. This article here is going to deal with Venezuela, their gold, and Iran, and then the other one is going to deal with Venezuela, their gold, and the Bank of England, okay? So now hopefully you get a better understanding of why it's gold, oil, and war. And then obviously when you understand Venezuela and Iran, what's their biggest export? What's their biggest revenue driver? Of course, oil and gas, right? So it's really always going back to that golden rule. Those with the gold make the rules. All right? So here is from Bloomberg. Iran is hauling gold bars out of Venezuela's almost empty vaults. The shipments are repaying Iran for help in reviving a refinery. The two longtime allies are both targets of U.S. sanctions. Out of cash and desperate for help in propping up its oil industry, Venezuela is raiding its gold vaults and handing tons of bars to its longtime ally, Iran. Government officials piled some 9 tons of gold, an amount equal to about $500 million, on Tehran-bound jets this month as payment for Iran's assistance in reviving Venezuela's crippled gasoline refineries. The shipments, which resulted in a sudden drop in Venezuela's published foreign reserve figures, leave the crisis-ravaged country with just $6.3 billion in hard currency assets, the lowest in almost 3 decades. The two nations, both pariahs of sorts in international circles, are working more closely together as they try to withstand withering U.S. sanctions and a coronavirus-sparked collapse in the price of oil, their main source of revenue. For Iran, the deals provide a fresh source of revenue. For Venezuela, they ensure that its supply of gasoline doesn't totally run out. Iran is the latest destination for Venezuelan gold after the U.S. cracked down on similar deals that the Nicolas Maduro regime was conducting with Russia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates. Those same countries that we have been talking about that I alluded to earlier in today's podcast about maybe some countries are building up their gold reserves, which they are, and perhaps these are some of the same countries that are attempting to move away from the U.S. dollar for payment. Very interesting. The sanctioned Tehran-based carrier Mahan Air has flown more than half a dozen jets to the South American nation in the past week alone. This has also caught some of the mainstream media's attention, I saw. Most delivered gasoline additives, parts, and technicians to help repair a key refinery along Venezuela's northwestern coast. Meanwhile, Mahan has sent other planes to the international airport outside of Caracas, where they are loaded with gold bars to take back to Tehran. $500 million in gold, don't forget. A press official with Venezuela's central bank, which holds the gold, didn't respond to requests for comment, nor did officials at Venezuela's information ministry or Iran's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. As oil prices collapse, the gold held in Caracas is now an even more important source of wealth for Venezuela, which has been driven into extreme poverty under Maduro's socialist rule. While the country holds some 70 tons of its gold in vaults, selling it has become increasingly difficult. When Maduro's predecessor, the late Hugo Chavez, was in power, he and Iran's then-leader Mahmoud Ahmadinejad cut deals on a variety of energy, agricultural, and financial projects. And after a brief and rare respite, Venezuela's currency is once again in free fall, and inflation has started picking back up with the annual rate climbing to above 3,500%. Talk about hyperinflation. Get ready. A strict quarantine to fight the coronavirus pandemic is beginning to show cracks, and the risk of greater social unrest is growing as Venezuela frantically tries to secure food and fuel. One thing after the next, ladies and gentlemen. One thing after the next. And then the article concludes with the following. The gold and remaining central bank assets are part of a larger battle for control. Let me repeat this. The gold and remaining central bank assets are part of a larger battle for control of Venezuela's finances between Maduro and Juan Guaido, the National Assembly leader who is trying to install a transitional government with the support of the U.S., as well as Latin American and European nations. Those with the gold make the rules. Who's Juan Guaido? The same guy who was one of the honored guests of Donald Trump at this year's State of the Union address. You think all this stuff is just happening coincidentally? All of the social unrest, the protests that are taking place, people starving to death, these sanctions being put on them. Starting to connect the dots here. You're starting to paint the picture. I again hope I am wrong, but history would tell us otherwise. This is an article out of Reuters. Venezuela asked the Bank of England to sell its gold to the United Nations for coronavirus relief. Venezuela is asking the Bank of England to sell part of the South American nation's gold reserves held in its coffers and send the proceeds to the United Nations to help with the country's coronavirus fighting efforts, according to two sources with knowledge of the situation. Venezuela, for decades, stored gold that makes up part of its central bank reserves in the vaults of foreign financial institutions, including the Bank of England, which provides gold custodian services to many developing countries. How nice of them. But the Bank of England has since 2018 refused to transfer the 31 tons of gold to the government of President Nicolas Maduro, whom Great Britain has refused to recognize as the country's legitimate leader after his disputed 2018 re-election. How nice that must be for a government to simply pick and choose who it's going to recognize. I wonder if you tried doing the same thing, if you recognized or said, you know what, I don't recognize the authority of a state trooper or a judge or the FBI or the government. Pick your poison. Pick your poison. It's perfectly okay for governments, some of them anyways, to meddle in other people's affairs. It's completely fine for them to say, we acknowledge you, we don't acknowledge you. Why don't you try doing it? Why don't you try printing money too? The Fed can do it and they can give it to all their buddies. You try printing money to pay off your debts or to go buy assets. They'll lock you up and throw away the key. Isn't it funny? Because these jokers work for us. Something tells me it might be the other way around. The effort signals that Maduro is desperately seeking financial resources around the world as the country's economy struggles under low oil prices, crippling U.S. sanctions, and a paralyzing coronavirus quarantine. Consulted about the issue, United Nations Development Program said it has, quote, has been approached recently to explore mechanisms to use existing resources held by the Central Bank of Venezuela and financial institutions outside of the country to fund the ongoing efforts to address the COVID-19 pandemic, end quote. It was not immediately evident how much gold Venezuela was asking the Bank of England to sell. At current market prices, Venezuelan gold on deposit at the Bank of England would be worth about $1.7 billion. In response to all of this, the Bank of England said it does not comment on individual customer relations. Just that the UK does not recognize the Maduro regime and they're not going to sell their gold. Former UN aid chief Jan Engelen on Tuesday called for sanctions on Venezuela and other countries to be lifted and urged the release of Venezuelan funds in banks in Britain, the United States, and in Portugal. Venezuela has lived a six-year economic crisis driven by a collapsing socialist system and a decaying oil industry, driving a mass migration of nearly 5 million people and fueling hyperinflation that has left many unable to obtain basic food. What else do you need to hear, ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to the protests and the riots and the unrest that is going to pick up once again after these economies reopen? Some of them aren't even reopened. Lebanon, again, they're burning down banks. These people are starving to death. They have nothing else to lose, so they're losing it. What else do we have here finishing up this? Gold sales continue. This is under the same article. Maduro's government has for years raised cash by exporting gold, both from artisanal mines in the southern Amazon jungle and from gold reserves held by the central bank. The central bank has continued to remove gold from its coffers in the last month with the hopes of exporting it, according to three sources, one of whom said 8 tons has been removed since quarantine started in mid-March. And of course, some of this is going to Iran per the previous article. So there you have it, folks. Gold is moving around. Some of it maybe because they got to sell the asset to get some cash so they can pay for goods, pay for food, pay for health services, in Venezuela. Others might be jockeying, moving that gold around to protect it, giving it to Iran. Who knows? Who knows? I'm not behind closed doors. I'm not behind the scenes. But when you get these little glimpses of things, this is how I make my connections. A lot of the times I'm right. Sometimes, of course, I'm wrong. I'm not going to be right 100% of the time. Nobody is. But these are the things that I try to pay attention to and say, why are they doing this? And why are they doing it now? Follow the money. Who benefits? Start connecting these dots and you'll paint the picture. Pay attention to the big picture, not the crap on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, not the three stories that they talk about all day with the same idiots. 7.5 billion people on this planet, and it's only three stories they talk about. You ever scratch your head and wonder why? Gold, oil, and war. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.